Hello and welcome to Series 1 of the podcast The Heart of Teaching, produced by Hibernia College. My name is Aoife Lynham, teacher and researcher, and in this podcast I speak with educators from a variety of fields and ask them about the teachers who inspired them to get where they are today. So join us as we meet the inspirational for a little bit of inspiration. I'm absolutely delighted to have Dr. Evie Ní Húlavaughan in the studio with us today. You might recognise this name, Evie Ní Húlavaughan. Perhaps it's from her days of winning the Rose of Tralee, or it could be through the great and fantastic work that she has done with raising awareness of science and mathematics education and her work within the science and maths community. Dr. Evie is an assistant professor in the School of Mathematics and Statistics, where she is director of the Bachelor in Science. She looks after science, mathematics and education programmes in the College of Science. And a lot of her research investigates issues in mathematics education, with particular focus on teacher education and the development of teacher pedagogical content knowledge. Evie is going to tell us a little bit today about coming from a family of teachers, about how it's incredibly important to have a strong education system, as well as the challenges that she's faced along the way as she's developed throughout her career. Okay, so Evie, tell me, why did you become a teacher?
Well, it's a very long-winded story, Aoife, about why I became a teacher, because my undergraduate degree was in theoretical physics in UCD, and I absolutely loved my undergraduate degree. And then I got a little bit sidetracked with the Rose of Tralee, and I took a little break and I came back and I wanted to continue with my studies in physics. And I had a PhD scholarship for University College London. And I started my research PhD over there, which was in physics and biology. That's where I wanted to work. But 6 months into it, I realized that I really wasn't happy. It wasn't something that I wanted to do. And this is something that I think some science students face every now and again. You're fascinated by what you're learning and what you're doing. But I realized that that line of work was actually going to be quite solitary and very isolated, I felt. And I realized a few months into that PhD that I wasn't going to enjoy it. I wasn't going to pursue that PhD. And it was awful because it just meant I'd made the wrong decision and I had to really rethink, what do I want to do with my life? What do I actually think I'm going to be happy doing? And mother's always right, unfortunately, because she'd always said to me, you should do teaching. But it was only at that point that I started to think about it. Do I want to be a teacher? And because I was so passionate about physics and maths, I was so interested in it all of the time. But I never really thought that I wanted to be a teacher. It was only at that point where I wasn't happy in that PhD that I had a look at it. And I just thought, well, do you know what? Maybe I would like it because I really want to be surrounded by people all of the time. I love these subjects and I actually wouldn't mind if I was, you know, sharing that love with other people. And so I took a job substituting in St. Mark's Community School in Talla, and I taught maths, physics and applied maths. This is before I did my diploma, postgraduate diploma in education, because I just wanted to get a taster for it. And that position was only meant to last 6 weeks, but it actually lasted a whole term. I loved it. I wasn't great, but I loved it. And I decided then, okay, that's what I want to do. I want to be a teacher.
Brilliant. And was there anyone along the way that you kind of tried to emulate, or a teacher that really inspired you?
Well, I'm probably a cliche in that I come from a family of teachers. So my dad is or was a teacher. He was principal of Carnacon National School. My mom was a teacher. She still is a teacher. She's vice principal of the Gaelic School, School Rathery in Castlebar. You know, I have aunties who are teachers. So, you know, I grew up in that education landscape. Both my parents, they both taught me and they were exceptionally good teachers. Of course, I had other good teachers along the way. And, you know, I had some great teachers in secondary school. Well, obviously, my physics teacher, I thought he was super, Mr. McMonagall, and he really gave me a love of physics because we could have conversations outside of the curriculum, outside of the textbooks. I really liked, you know, my Irish teacher for junior cycle, Miss Sweeney. She was young and cool and she did lots of interesting things with us. There was no learning off of essays in any of those classes. You know, we had teachers who had us involved in debates in Irish and Oscailga. So I had lots of good teachers. My English teachers as well, you know, I used to write poetry, but they really, you know, encouraged me, I think, to do all that kind of thing. So I got to be quite creative in school. So I had a lot of good teachers, but I just didn't think that it was going to be the thing for me. I thought it was, you know, I thought it was going to be kind of a boring job. And I think when you're a student and your only perspective of teaching is as a student, you don't realize the complexities of every day. You don't realize the challenges of every day. You don't realize that you're constantly going to be learning as a teacher. And so I think that that's why I shied away from it. And I wanted to do a degree that I was, you know, really, really interested in. And I wanted to learn more about, you know, general relativity and particle physics and all of that kind of stuff. But when it came down to thinking about, well, what do you want to do now for the rest of your life? Actually, it became clear to me that education was the important thing. So I'm sure I was influenced by all of the good teachers that I've had in my world. And also, you know, as you get older, you realize that, you know, society doesn't work unless you have a really strong education system. So to be part of that, I think, is a privilege.
Mm-hmm. And do you think there was any challenges along the way? Was there anything that you found difficult?
There are a lot of challenges along the way. I mean, when I started teaching before I had done my postgraduate diploma in education, I had no idea about pedagogy. And so I had no idea how to, you know, come in and be assertive in a classroom, to develop a mutual relationship with students that's respectful. So there were a couple of incidents where, you know, I had children storming out. A chair was thrown at one point, not at me necessarily, but at one point. And, you know, there were a lot of challenges then. And I seemed to be failing with the classes that were kind of designated as weaker. But then later on, after I qualified and became a teacher and was working as a teacher, it's actually those weaker classes that are labelled as weaker classes, but they're not. I mean, those students are wonderful. They just have a little bit more difficulty grasping the topics and the learning outcomes that you're planning for them. It takes a bit more time. And now I realise that a good teacher is really good when they can work with those types of students and they can bring those students along. So I guess that was the challenge, to kind of realize, oh, how do you do this? To realize that different class groups have to be approached in different ways, to realize that your personal relationship with your students underpins everything that you do. Because when that's right, you don't have classroom management issues to deal with, and they want to learn for you. And so I think that they were challenges that I had to learn about pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. And what was your favorite part about teaching?
Oh, my favorite part about teaching was just being in the classroom and getting to that point with your students where they actually are happy to come to your class, that you're able to have a little bit of banter with them, that they know you will challenge them, but in a good way. And you know that yes, they might challenge you, but not to take that personally. Mm-hmm. I think when that develops, it's really good. And you've just reminded me now, I had one particular class of fifth year boys. Well, there were 17 boys and three very, very, very quiet girls. But of the boys, this one day, nobody had their homework done. And I really gave it to them. And it wasn't often that I would give out, but I stood at the top of that class and I just said to them, you know what? I've been working so hard for you. You've been doing demonstrations and experiments. We've been looking at videos. We've been trying to have a lot of fun with physics, but I'm going to finish that now, because if you're not working with me, I'm not going to work with you. So everybody just open your books. And the threat of just getting them to read out a physics book and learn off definitions was enough that they all, the next class, everybody had their homework done. And one particular boy said, "Miss, do you like us now again?" And I had them. And, you know, we had so much fun learning physics that year. You know, they really engaged with all of the experiments and the demos, you know, and they actually studied. So it was moments like that that made it all worthwhile, where you've got that relationship with your students that they enjoy coming to your classroom. And even if they're finding it hard, it's OK because they don't mind asking you. I guess it was another moment in my honours sixth year class, and we were one of the Project Maths pilot schools. So I was trying to get, you know, a grasp of the curriculum that we were teaching at the same time as the students almost. And there was a particular financial maths question that I had been doing on the board, but realised, I've gone wrong somewhere. And I had to take a step back and go, okay, where did I go wrong, guys? And they're like, actually, miss, we just spotted it. They had been working in two teams and the class had as my students. And it was just brilliant because we had a whole conversation around where the mistake was, why the mistake was there. And they were building their own confidence and their own knowledge. So it's moments like that you like, you know, when your first years are a couple of weeks into school, and that you greet them at the door and they're smiling, even though they're coming into maths class, and they're even surprised themselves at that. That's what makes it all worthwhile.
And I think actually from what you said earlier about relationships and the importance of relationships, that the only way you can have those open conversations and honest conversations about mistakes are when you have good relationships with your class. So I suppose everyone looks to you as the expert in maths and expert in science. And, you know, you're an inspiration for quite a lot of people in that area. Is there any guidance you could give to us mere mortals about, you know, strategies and methodologies and making, you know, when I listen to you, I nearly want to go back to maths class and science class. And I had a mental block about maths when I was in school, like I was terrified of it. And I suppose my main aim as a teacher was that I want to not have that be the experience of my pupils in my class. So can you tell us about how you make that maths and science so fun and so engaging for your pupils?
Well, thanks, Aoife. I don't think I am an expert. You know, I wasn't actually teaching for very long, and I'm quite happy to say that as well. But it's something that I am passionate about, and I always keep my teaching council registration up to date because I might go back to the classroom at some point. But I think particularly for, say, primary teachers who may not have the same background as, you know, if you're becoming a maths and science teacher at second level, you have the background in mathematics and science. And so you should be, you know, comfortable with it. But I think at primary level, people mightn't feel as confident in their own knowledge. So I always think that one of the most important things is to remember that you can always learn more. And so if you don't feel secure in your knowledge of something, it's okay to go back and learn it. And I always think, you know, looking at a multitude of resources is the best way to do that. You know, there's tons of videos online for learning maths nowadays. The second thing is, as you said, to try not to communicate any negative messages about learning particular subjects. So my area of research now is particularly focused on maths education. And the cultural messages that students pick up about mathematics really impacts how they learn it. So when they hear things like, oh, I'm just not a maths person, that actually seeps it through. And there's no such thing because there's no maths gene. It takes some people a little longer to grasp a topic or a concept. But as teachers, it's our job to explain it in different ways for different students. All the research will tell you that the best way to teach mathematics is to bring together a multitude of ways of looking at it. So if we're looking at showing students what an equation is, that yes, you look at the equation in an algebraic sense, but you'd also show it in a graph. And you might also have a demonstration of a weighing scales so that we always know that what we do to one side, we have to do to the other. My pet peeve is when, you know, people say, oh, you take the number and you bring it over the equal sign and change the sign. That's not a mathematical thing. What you're actually doing is you're adding four to both sides, for example, or you're dividing both sides by two. So I think brushing up on the concepts to make sure that you are confident with it, first of all, and then to be positive about it. And as we just said a couple of minutes ago, mistakes are so important. Do you know, if we talk about a growth mindset is something where when you look at mistakes, you value them as a learning opportunity. And in mathematics, you are not a mathematician if you aren't making mistakes. A mathematician will work on a maths project for months, maybe even years. And it's all about making mistakes, reflecting on it, going back to the start, trying a different avenue. So mistakes are part of learning. And I think in maths class, that has to be inherent in how we teach mathematics. If I see a, you know, a copybook or a workbook with no mathematics workings on it, that is not mathematics to me. That's just learning something off. And anybody can do that. But it's actually the understanding that you need. And so keeping all of the work there, whether it's messy or not, the best way to teach and to learn mathematics is to talk about it in a way that makes sense. So for me, when I'm teaching mathematics and when I'm teaching maths pedagogy to my pre-service teachers, I always talk about sense making. So to make sure that your students can make sense about what they're doing verbally, but also to write that out. And it actually improves their literacy and their numeracy at the same time. So it's all about making sense of mathematics. That's not great. About how you do it. It's why you're doing it.
And I think that I just love that idea of creating that kind of an atmosphere where it's really safe, that failure is not only accepted, it's encouraged, mm-hmm. that actually we learn more from those mistakes sometimes mm-hmm. than we do from our successes. So you've mentioned there a bit about, you know, a resource and things like that, the weighing scale. So often as primary school teachers, we can be guilty of always wanting to be, you know, resource heavy and resource. Yeah. But what are your views on maybe perhaps an over-reliance on resources?
Well, I think resources are important as long as they're relevant to the students. Mm-hmm. And so, look, I'm from a family of primary school teachers. My mom has the whole of the cupboards downstairs still full of resources. However, a lot of them have been gaining dust the last few years. So I think it's great to have resources, particularly if they're relevant to that particular class of students. But I don't think you need to be overly reliant on them. The way I look at teachers is that, you know, they're professional. They know what they're doing. They know their class group. They know what they're teaching. They're the best person to decide what resource is going to be the best to use in that classroom. And so while it's good to be always aware of resources, you don't always have to use everything. And I think having a few key resources to yourself is a really good idea, or perhaps sharing some around mm-hmm. school. So, for example, with myself, if, you know, I know how to use algebra tiles if I'm teaching algebra. But I found out just through practice that it doesn't suit all students to use algebra tiles. So it's not a resource I would actually take into a class unless I was dealing with students who found it very, very difficult to grasp what, you know, a quadratic expression looks like. So there I would bring in the visuals. But I think it's not necessary to rely on other people's resources all the time. I also think, you know, teachers are highly qualified and create their own resources, and they can create really good resources. And sometimes, you know, I'd be very critical of textbooks because not all textbooks are written by practicing teachers who've actually looked at research and looked at the best ways of doing it. My own master's students this year have looked at textbooks and, you know, how good they might be teaching particular mathematics topics. And we found very, very little correlation between what the research is telling us about how to teach that topic and what the textbook is. So I think teachers, you know, are skilled enough to actually create their own resources and have their own bank of resources. And now that we live in a world of technology, we can have, you know, our Dropbox folders and our online platforms that kind of store all of them. And there's loads that are available to share between teacher associations as well. So I have a couple of like websites that I would always recommend to people, like the Teaching for Robust Understanding website for mathematics. Enrich is great for mathematics as well. And, you know, there's loads of places like mathplayground.com, kind of for primary, upper primary, maybe lower secondary, for games for students. But resources are always a tool to get that learning objective achieved with your particular students. So I think it's like any recipe. You know, you can have the main ingredients for your shepherd's pie, but we're all going to have our own little tips and tricks to how to make that particular way that you want it to taste. And I think that that's where the skill of a teacher comes in, that you'll have your general resources and then you have your own kind of favourites that you'll use. So I think that they're kind of professional decisions that teachers will make.
And I think that's actually a really brilliant tip that you've given there about, you know, looking critically at the textbooks that are in front of us, looking and analysing them. And, you know, and that's what's the great thing to see about the professional master's programmes now, that research is really embedded into those programs and that, you know, in order to be really good teachers, we also need to be really good researchers and investigate.
I think that's hugely important. But I also recall that when I was studying for my postgraduate diploma in education, I didn't quite see the link between what I was doing and the research that I was reading. So for those student teachers who are listening maybe right now and are going, oh my God, I have to spend so much time doing this nonsensical theory and writing another essay about it, you may not think that it's relevant right now, but wait till you're out next year and they'll happen. It will happen that you will have an incident or an event or an interaction where it will come into play. And you know, that theory actually underpins your philosophy and that underpins everything that you're doing as a teacher. So that research that you're engaging with is really, really important. And I think as we become more professionalized, and we need to, because teaching is, as I said earlier, one of the most important professions in the world. Education underpins society, and society will then work based on the quality of the teachers that we have. So I really think teachers deserve far more respect. But part of that professionalization will be that teachers become researchers of their own practice, that they can be really critical. So while at the beginning of your teacher education, it may not seem quite relevant, trust me and trust you, in time it will become. And it's really good if you can be critical about educational theory and educational practice and educational policy.
That's a really good tip. And I suppose, is there anything else that you'd like to say to future teachers? You know, what would be your number one piece of advice that you would offer them?
I think, I mean, there's so much to think about for when you're becoming a teacher. I think one of the most important things is to hold on to why you want to become a teacher. If it's at second level, you're probably passionate about the things that you want to teach. And so to hold on to that, not to get lost. I think when you're working at the post-primary level, it becomes very exam focused really quickly. And I think it's okay to be renegade and it's okay to go off script, because your students will learn an awful lot more of the knowledge and skills that will actually be required of them before the assessments. Now, our assessments are changing and they will change in time. But actually, the real gift that you can give to your students is to equip them for the real world. So having those transferable skills where they're confident in being able to communicate their thinking, they can work in teams, they can present. They just have that innate confidence. And your role as a teacher is to actually instill all of your students with confidence, not just the good ones. I think that that's really important to keep in mind. I don't have experience teaching at primary level. So I guess I don't know if I can talk to that as much. But I really think that your primary school teachers are so impactful in the rest of your life that I think we really need to keep in mind that every student should have a positive learning experience every day. I just think it's so sad to think of kids that they're getting given out to, or they just don't have positive experiences at school. And I think that's part of our job. I mean, the job of a teacher is so complex. You're not just teaching them the content. You are everything else in their world. So I just think that that's important to keep in mind. I read an article recently in The Guardian, actually, and it's written from a kid's perspective who he's looking after his mom. She's got three jobs. He's got two younger siblings and he's arrived into school again with a dirty uniform and he hasn't had breakfast and he's late and he's just getting given out to. And sometimes it's really important for us as teachers to take a step back. And while we have to maintain our own norms and own rules in our classroom, to an extent, we also have to always try and consider it from the student's perspective. So I think that that's maybe one of the most important tips I can give to anybody who's going to become a teacher. Just try and think about it from the student's perspective, whatever it is.
Yeah, and I'd agree with you wholeheartedly. I remember one of the bits of research that I did, someone saying, you know, children come to school with more than just the bags on their back. And I suppose that really encapsulates what you're saying there, and that we have to keep that in mind. So just as we finish up, if you had a magic wand, I was able to give you one, what would you like to see developed or changed or adapted?
That's actually education. I do think about quite a lot. Like, what would I do now if I could change this right away? So for me, one of the main things that I would change, and mightn't sound very popular, but actually it would be to ensure that teachers had to engage in professional development. Now, that sounds terrible in one way, because you're just like, oh my God, you're asking more of teachers, really? But teachers are doing it anyway. Teachers are engaging in professional development, but they're not getting recognized for it. So I think when you bring in a system where professional development is regulated, it means that those who are engaging at a high level are getting really well acknowledged for it. And those who maybe feel like, oh, I have to do this again, even if they think about it in a negative way, it's going to impact on them positively. So when I was a teacher in St. Mark's and Tala, and we put ourselves forward to be a Project Maths pilot school, we were all putting in so much extra work and we didn't mind it. But we didn't really know how to go about utilising our time best as a maths department. We didn't know how to work together. And what I really wanted was to learn how to work with my colleagues. And that prompted me to go and do my PhD and look into lesson study and how teachers could actually collaborate in building their professional knowledge, but also impacting on their practice in a positive way. So for me, professional development is core to all of that, because we have exceptionally good teachers mm-hmm. out there. We need to recognize them for the additional time and effort that they put into their practice. So that would be one thing my magic wand would do. Mm-hmm. I know it's supposed to come into policy, but I think it needs to come in sooner rather than later. So that would be one thing. The second thing I would do is to try and ensure that primary schools are linked with secondary schools, are linked with the university. I've been to Japan a couple of times now. Lesson study, as I said, is one of my key areas of research in teacher education. And in Japan, what they have is that it's a fundamental collaborative environment for teachers to work together. And in that, they also work with university professors who kind of feed into their conversations about pedagogy. So if a group of teachers is looking at, for example, what's the best way that we can teach addition of decimals? And that mightn't sound like a difficult thing to do, but you know, when you unpick it, there's so much mathematics to it, but they'll bring in a university professor to kind of input into that and to reflect on the lesson that they're conducting and reflect on students' thinking. So it's all joined up, because when teachers collaborate in this way in Japan, what they learn feeds back into the textbooks, and the textbooks are all approved by the Ministry for Education there, so there's no mistakes in them, because mm-hmm. there's quite a lot of mistakes in the textbooks that are out there at the minute in terms of mathematics, and then it feeds back in because it's shared knowledge, because now all of the teachers in the country can access that. So I would like some little more joined up thinking, because I would like my own student teachers to have excellent mentor teachers that they can learn from. Mm-hmm. And again, that mentoring would be recognized. So mm-hmm. I guess it's just kind of joining up the systems a little bit more that I'd like to see a little bit more of. And then if I can have one more thing, I'm taking it as three genie wishes three genie rather than a magic wand, Eva, sorry. If I had one more thing, I would make a little bit more of an adjustment to the assessments that we have. So I lecture mathematics now at undergraduate level as well. And what we do, we see our first years, for example, for a semester, and they have continuous assessment. So in the course that I teach, it's weekly assignments and then an end of semester assignment as well, or exam. So with that, they're keeping up to date with their new learning every week. And then we have something else at the end. When I teach maths pedagogy, we have four different types of assignments, because they have weekly reflections, they have a group work project, they have an individual essay, and they have a report. And I just think having different types of assessments of learning like that is actually far more beneficial to our students. Mm-hmm. And so having this 1 2.5 hour exam at the end of your 6 years, I think it's a little bit of a cruel way to treat our learners, but it's also not preparing them for the world afterwards. And so that's something else that I really think we need to affect change.
That's brilliant. So I hope there's lots of very important people listening so that they can affect those changes. So I suppose, just to summarise, would the heart of teaching be for you, having listened to you now, mm-hmm. that relationships are so vitally mm-hmm. important, that creating an atmosphere where there's a growth mindset in your classroom mm-hmm. is very valuable, that, you know, encouraging critical reflection of our textbooks and making sure that we're really assessing what we're doing and how we're doing it. Mm. And then finally, you know, looking at that joined up thinking and that CPD for teachers mm-hmm. to make sure that we're all kind of singing from the same hymn sheet.
Yeah, I think that that's really important. So if I could take those 4 points and actually mm-hmm. just boil it down even a little further, I would say the key to being a highly effective teacher is, one, the relationships in your classroom; two, the relationships with your colleagues; and three, the relationship with your own practice, that if you can be critical and reflective of it. I think that really kind of sums it up for me. And I'm not going to pretend that I was the best teacher in the world. I certainly wasn't, and I'd have loads of ways and areas to improve, but I loved it and I did always want to try and get better at it.
And I think actually that's the biggest learning thing for everyone, and that's the key message of this podcast, that actually none of us are perfect, and mm-hmm. that actually to be the best teachers we want to be, it's to constantly kind of mm-hmm. try to develop and try to learn and reflect. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks, Aoife.